Hello, everybody. It's been a little while. We have been on and off for the past, I think, year now. And there is a reason for that. I have to be vague. It has to do with my dad's situation. But we're back, and I'm pretty confident that we'll be back weekly. So I'm hoping things are going well for you. Things have been going well here. Just got back from my first race of the season down in Texas, 70.3 in Galveston. Had a really great season opening race. Was able to improve my time by about 15 minutes. New age group, new time, new PR. So one of the neat things that I've been doing this season that if you're local to Rochester, I really want you to consider, I've been working over at the new UR Fitness Science Center. University of Rochester built this huge orthopedic sports performance complex right at the Marketplace Mall. And it's a really neat model. I believe it was Vanderbilt that did this earlier, where they put a performance center in of some kind and kind of revitalized the mall. But they have everything there, including personal training and nutrition services and even sports psychology. I've been working with Connor Lorenzo on strength. Holly Gilligan is a registered dietitian there. I've been working with her. And I've even had the opportunity to work with a sports psychologist named Dr. Seifer. If you're not familiar with how sports psychology works, it's so fun. What had happened was, is after my dad had died, I was in grief therapy for about 2 years. And we were coming to the end of it where I was, quote, graduating. And I thought, geez, I have this in my budget. I've got the time. I have this real interest in sports psychology. And someone referred me to Dr. Seifer, who is really an incredible human being. Sports psychology is not diving into your childhood and, you know, where you went wrong and stuff. It's really been about, whoops, I just moved my mic, creating a framework in which to train and compete. Some of the things that I've been able to work on with him is like really developing my values surrounding sport, why I do this sport, you know, in races, coming back to a neutral mindset, kind of going, you know, getting a framework essentially of how to operate mentally during races, which we all think we have down. We spend so much time and money training the body, but we don't do it enough with the mind. And I'm pretty open that I'm a huge, huge supporter of mental health. I take care of mine. And when someone tells me they're in therapy, that's one of the biggest things I will applaud you for. There is nothing more important than your physical health and your mental health, hands down. The other thing I got to do at the UR Sports Science Center or Sports Fitness Science, I keep forgetting what I'm calling it. I've worked with Tyler Murray, who's a really great physical therapist there, on a run assessment. And then they put me in this new thing. It's called the Motion Lab. And if you Google it, you'll find some good pictures of it. But what it is it's this room where the treadmill is flush with the floor, which is weird because you can step off of it. And the treadmill has the ability to measure your, like, how much strength you have in your legs. So for running, it can measure how much you're pushing off, how much you're landing. Does your right leg stronger than your left? They also put sensors all over your body, and they can measure, like, are your hamstrings firing more than, you know, this other part of your body? And they can really give you a detailed analysis. I've always had a big discrepancy between my swim and my bike are very strong. My run's always been my weakest link, but in the past few years, it's, you know, become even weaker. I've had some injuries that we realize I've been compensating with in my form. But now that I'm healthy, I really went for it, and it's been an incredible progression. We're still in the beginning stages of changing my form, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops through the whole season. What's really cool about that Motion Lab is that while it is for athletes of all kinds to assess movement and help you develop better form in your chosen sport, one of the things I believe they're using it for is to, you know, if you're a quadriplegic or if you're a stroke patient and you have limited mobility, they actually have a harness where they can, like, kind of hold you over the treadmill and have you walk and put these sensors on you and be able to tell you, like, what's firing, what's not. Children with cerebral palsy can go in there. So it's at the very beginning stages, and they're doing a lot of research. But if you have the opportunity and the interest, give it a shot. Definitely give them a call. Their strength training, their nutrition services, and sports psychology are available to everybody, and they're totally affordable, believe it or not. It's been an awesome experience and one that I hope to really talk about as my season goes on. So today I just wanted to briefly chat about two things as a coach I don't really buy with athletes anymore. And I say these things carefully, and then we'll do a quick mailbag question. There's two things I don't really buy, and I say that, you know, kind of in a humorous way, but and I don't mean to mock anybody, but there are two things that are very important pieces of training that I really think athletes don't do well, you know, myself included. So the first thing is telling your coach or me, I can't rest. And I have a big caveat to this coming up. Some people think it's an admirable trait, you know, when athletes are like, oh, I can't rest, like it's some sort of sign of strength or toughness. And this is a really bad analogy, but it does illustrate the point. If we said, oh, I can't stop drinking or smoking, would you find that admirable? Exercise is just supposed to always be healthy, so we applaud overindulgence. And should we? With that being said, actually, I should say I have two caveats to that. Ultra running, marathoning, Ironman training, a lot of these endurance events, they are a little bit overindulgent, I guess you could say. And it does require a significant amount of time and training. But what really matters when we're building fitness is the endurance training takes time. But even if you know the basics of physiology and exercise science, you know that it's through the combination of applying a training load, recovery, restoration, that muscle gets stronger. It repairs itself and gets stronger. So does that mean I have to lay on the couch every time I have a recovery week or a recovery day? Not at all. First of all, fitness is not measured in 7 days. Fitness, I personally look at an athlete's month, and I want to see a couple red days in there, meaning I skipped a workout or I took a day off. If everything was built in 7 days, we'd be, you know, up a tree here. So it really happens over a much longer period of time than that. But what I want to emphasize is that recovery doesn't always mean laying on the couch. Good recovery modalities, walking, hiking, if you're someone who does yoga, even just mobility work. I have an athlete who was very honest with me and was like, I have a hard time resting and this is why. And their reasons were extremely valid. I related to them, totally got it. So we kind of developed this system. This is what I'm about to say is not this athlete's training volume, but just as an example and a round number, I'm going to use 12 hours for an athlete's, like, let's say it's their weekly training load is about 12 hours. Well, let's say during a recovery week, we drop that down to maybe 8 to 10. How much should you recover? It really depends on the athlete. The answer to every test question should be letter E. It depends. Depends on the athlete. What are they training for? What is their cycle? What is their life like? You know, are they someone who's working a 12-hour shift? Are they someone who's, you know, working from home? So it depends. But let's say, for example, we're going to drop them down to 8 to 10 hours. What we do with this athlete is we have them maybe make up that difference in time with walking and mobility. So they're still getting that volume in, but they've really dropped it down. So I think that that counts. I wouldn't jump into 4 hours of yoga a week if you've never done yoga before. Just like running, yoga would be something you want to build into. But just as an example that, yes, some days recovery means that you lay on the couch. Other days recovery means that you're going for a walk instead of a bike. But fitness gains do not happen without the recovery aspect. And fitness gains don't happen without the stress aspect. So you have to find that balance. And again, it's very different for everyone. So when an athlete tells me they can't rest, I try to dive a little bit deeper. Why? Because we can. It's not admirable to drill yourself into the ground anymore. That phase of our fitness careers are over regardless of your age. Just keep that in mind as you're building your program and as you're working with your coach. If you're not someone who enjoys laying on the couch, personally, I don't either. Maybe you enjoy walking. All right. So the second thing that I don't buy is I can't fuel my workouts. As I said, training isn't just one day. It's not built in 7 days. Monday's fueling or lack of fueling a workout affects Wednesday's workout, believe it or not. So let's take another example here. Let's say you train 12 hours a week, again, just for a round number. And let's say of that 12 hours, you swim 4 hours. Athletes will frequently tell me, I'm not going to fuel my swims even with water because in an Ironman or half Ironman swim, you don't get to drink. I don't buy it. When you arrive to a race on race day, you are rested, you are hydrated, you're ready to go. So you can go that hour without drinking. When you're swimming 4 hours a week in a 12-hour training week and you're not fueling, think of your gas tank when you're starting the week. Say you're on full. So you do this swim workout and you don't hydrate. You've depleted your tank to half. And again, this is just an analogy, not like science, exact science. So now you've started your second workout on Monday at half a tank of gas. You're going into Tuesday. At minimum, you're at half a tank of gas. But if you fuel that workout on Monday, that swim workout, you'll stay closer to 100% in that tank of gas. So don't take 4 hours away from yourself if you're not going to fuel those four swims. And what do I mean by fueling? Again, it's different for everybody. If you're training 4 hours or 12 hours a week, I highly recommend adding some carbohydrates and electrolytes into that fuel. I like to see for an hour workout anywhere between 12 and 24 ounces. Again, depends on the athlete, but you need that. You need that fuel if you're training 12 hours a week. It's not just the one day that matters. It's how it plays into the week and how it plays into the month. Just like we said when we were talking about recovery, fitness is not built in a week. I'd rather look at the month, and I'd rather you top off the body every single workout. But with that being said, there's a lot of fueling options out there, especially now. Back in, you know, when I started, there was like a couple. So it was almost easier to figure out what to use. I highly recommend, and I'm not sponsored by them, but I recommend going to the website, The Feed. You can get a plethora of products to try. Give it a couple workouts, see how it fits. If something doesn't work for one long workout, then try it again maybe, or see if you can tweak it. I highly recommend if you can link up with a registered dietitian who focuses in sports nutrition, that would be ideal. A couple names I can give you right off the bat would be to Google Stevie Smith, Holly Gilligan, Marnie Sumball, Kim Schwabenbauer. I know I'm forgetting people, but I would look for registered dietitian, different than nutritionist, different than a lot of other things. That is your most qualified person. Triathlon space has a lot of registered dietitians now, and they can really help you dial that in. That being said, when you get that fueling plan, you have to take the responsibility to adjust it to you. It probably will need some tweaking, but you have to take ownership of your fueling. You have to take ownership of your nutrition. It's a great framework to start, and that's where I would recommend beginning. So again, those are just two things as a coach that I don't quite buy. When an athlete tells me that one of these two things, I just like to dive a little bit deeper. There's workarounds for everything. There's workarounds for recovery. Maybe you have a different reason why you don't like to fuel your workouts, but we can figure it out. My big thing with my athletes is we have to be communicators, good communicators to one another. A training plan, I heard another coach say this, and I thought it was so smart. He goes, you know, a training plan is essentially written as if the person was going to have a perfect week. Coaching comes in when we have to adjust, you know, tweak and stuff like that. Coaching is not laying out this perfect week and having someone execute it as it stands. So I loved that. That's how life is. That's what coaches are for. I rely on my athletes to be good communicators with me. I need them to lean on me. That's why I'm there. I work with a very small group of athletes. And that's the reason, because I want to make sure that they feel like, I try to make them feel like they're the only athlete. So communicate with your coach, communicate with the people around you if you are self-coached. Don't think that not resting is some admirable trait. I hate that that's the narrative that's kind of still out there. I think it's changing. And I hate the narrative that I don't fuel my workouts. We can change that. So, all right, mailbag. This is a really good question. It's a little bit long, which is great. But let's see. Repeats on the track are the absolute worst workout for me mentally. A few years ago, I had a huge racing year. I did a race a month for the whole year, including my first marathon and two half Ironmans. I very thoroughly burned myself out. Shortly after one of my 70.3s, my coach was frustrated with my repeat workouts, and I expressed that I wanted to try to run them without a watch. Maybe have a friend time me on the side of the track, but not tell me the times. Mentally, I struggled because I would look at my watch partway through and hate the times I saw. And truthfully, I was just tired and unsure of my next steps athletically, and I probably needed some time to cover and reset. When I spoke to my coach about this idea to ditch the watch, this is what alarms me as a coach. He lost his mind on me. He said I could just be a recreational athlete if I wanted, because I obviously don't want to put in the work. We did part a week later. I was so upset by his reaction. Today, it boggles my mind how caught up we get in the technology of triathlon and life in general. I've stopped wearing my Garmin altogether. I don't track my steps. I don't delay a workout because my watch doesn't charge. I don't go work out in order to keep a streak if I don't feel like it. It may be interesting to discuss rate of perceived exertion, the benefits and drawbacks of relying on technology, and even how a coach can use technology as a tool or even play with technology-free workouts. I love this whole thing. I hate that you went through this with your coach. There is no situation, and this goes both ways, coach to athlete, athlete to coach. In no situation, as an adult, should a coach lose their mind on you and say those kinds of things to you. At the same token, an athlete should never lose their mind on a coach. This is triathlon. We are adults. I don't care if you're a professional or the last person who finishes. It's completely unprofessional on both of your parts, and I'm so glad you stepped away from this coach. That's a dangerous coach, in my opinion. So I think that that's awesome what you've morphed into. A couple weeks ago when I raced Texas, I brought my old bike, which is a darn good bike. His rim brakes, whoa. And I didn't have a computer. I don't have electronic shifting on it. And I didn't wear an aero helmet. And I rode a 233 in very good control, 56 miles, and I felt awesome. I felt very in control. I did that because I love to race on feel. I did that to show some of my athletes that it can be done. Last year, a guy around here like flipped out on me because I took electronic shifting off my bike. It's good for some people. I like to shift my bike. He really acted like I was about to lose the Olympics or something. So with that being said, as a coach, I love when my athletes wear their stuff, but don't look at it, because I'll look at it. At the same time, I'm not going to look at every single workout and be like, ooh, were we on this pace? Were we on that pace? I look at the trends over time. And I think that what you're doing right now is incredibly healthy. You have it in the background, and I think that's where it should stay. I have a friend who, one of their races, like they were looking at their watch like literally every 5 seconds. And that was probably just to kind of control some anxiety. I don't think they were actually, or maybe they were, actually looking at it. But sometimes, you know, the data, like, have you ever run with your Garmin and it was wrong? I have. GPS can be wrong. Data can fail. So you really have to know your body. I think that data teaches us how to know our body if we don't know it already. Some days you're running at a heart rate. Let's say your easy running pace is a 9:30 at a heart rate of 150. And for you, that's aerobic. Some days your pace is going to drop to over 10 minutes at that same heart rate. That's okay. It's not the workout every day that matters. It's the trends over time. I'd rather you hold that slower pace and stay in that green zone, that aerobic zone, than jack your heart rate up and get into a pace that you're not ready for. I think that I do think we over-rely on technology And I think it would be healthier if we can learn our bodies as the technology teaches us to. Yes, technology has a great role in our sport. We can use it to measure. We can use it to gauge improvements. I had posted that I rode my bike without data on Facebook. And boy, did I get a nasty gram from a guy who's like, you can't do that. You'll never improve. And I was like, dude, I did that for one race. I didn't say anything about what I trained with, you know? So it's a hot wire for some people. But again, I think a combination is great. I love that you go out to the track without your watch at all. You know, do that. That's where you learn how to race. You don't see people, you know, running the 100 meters on the track. You don't see Usain Bolt checking his watch out because he knows his pace by feel. So I think it all has a place, but I think that you are in a super healthy place where it's taken a back seat. I think that a coach who admonishes you or berates you for that or anything like that does not belong in the coaching field and definitely shouldn't be your coach. And I'm really glad that you had the wherewithal to step away from that relationship. That's not healthy. So again, technology has a place. Play with it. Enjoy your workouts without it. Enjoy your workouts with it. Wear a piece of tape over your watch. Play around with it. We're all amateurs here. A couple people are pro and even they do it. So let go a little bit. Life is more than measuring. I do the same thing though. I am not a good sleeper by nature. And then I spent 20 years working clinically, nights, weekends, and holidays. So my sleep was even worse. A couple years ago, I got the Whoop strap and I was really measuring it because I really wanted to improve my sleep. There were days where my feet hit the floor and I felt awesome, but I was getting like a really bad score. And then I was like, oh my God, I didn't sleep well. And I'm like, but I feel good. So then I did the same thing. I stopped tracking it. And when my feet hit the floor, I know that whether I had a good night of sleep or not. So trust your body. Your body, I promise you, will always tell you more than a gadget ever will. So hopefully that answered that question. Feel free to send me some questions. I got some in the bank here. I'd love some more. My email is maryeggers@gmail.com. You can connect with me on Facebook and Instagram. On Instagram, I'm the Mary Eggers. I don't remember why I did that, but there was a reason like 10 years ago. My social media is private for a reason, but I just have to screen every person I connect with because of the situation involving my dad. So my dad's death. So please don't hesitate to reach out. I just can't keep it public. And it cuts down on like all those weird follows that you get and the bots and stuff. So don't be shy. I would love to connect. You can also find us at the Valor Triathlon Project. We are full for this season. We fill up very quickly. So hopefully with this podcast, we can kind of reach some more people and all that. So with that being said, thanks so much for hanging in there with me. We'll be back next week. Definitely have to get some guests back on and get this thing rolling again. So thanks for hanging with us through the starts and the stops and the roller coaster. And we'll see you next time.